a pre-recorded version of the WTK Roundtable on WTK, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. This is recorded, though, so if you call in, nobody will answer you.
Hard, Jose.
No,
I don't want to discourage you from calling, Jose. Maybe it was a little too strong. But sometimes you just gotta. Sometimes it takes a good smack, Ira. Sometimes it takes a good smack.
Sam, a lot of people thinking that Jose is just an alter ego for Phil. So it's not good company, Jose. That's bad company to keep.
But we love you. We just met you, but we love you. All right. So we're here to support you. Let you know it's gonna be okay. Michigan is not returning to 2008 form. Okay, don't worry. Okay. They won't lose 9 straight games, which is what you asked us the other day, and I didn't answer that question directly. Michigan will not lose 9 consecutive games. Okay, I promise you. 734-998-1050. Open up the phone lines for our MGO blog roundtable. Introducing first the man after which this segment is named. From MGO Blog, Brian Cook. Brian, how are you?
My middle name is actually MGO Blog, so I just want to throw that out there.
We have Ed Fang from the Power Rank. How are you, Ed?
I'm good, except my ears are blown off because the one time I get in early to the studio.
Yeah, the
Sam
one time
is
you get in early.
Yelling at Jose. Jose.
I'm sorry, Jose. I should have gotten carried away.
But my eardrums are still kind of ringing in here. I don't know how the show is going to go today.
We did have Sam a question.
Fired up.
Normally, it's you two going back and forth. We got a question from via Twitter. It says, why are Ed and Brian, why do they always fight? What's going on with those two?
You hear my response? We're like two violins in a symphony, man.
No, that's not true. It's
all harmonious.
Well, Ed's going to explain to us why Missouri is better than a lot of us think.
No, don't do that.
Hey, look, we're talking about Purdue. They look good this season, okay?
No one's denied they've looked better than they were last year.
About as conservative as you can possibly get about taking these first couple games, but they're significantly better. I mean,
Purdue.
They were a 3-point.
He was asking about Mizzou.
What?
Yeah, how much?
We don't care about Mizzou. Yeah, but Missouri's a tertiary data point when you, for you, what we're
when
talking
you
about.
Use, it's about how much you factor that into your evaluation of Purdue.
Right.
That they went and they destroyed Missouri. But what does that mean? How much stock do you put in that?
Well, you put as much stock as you put in, any other game. I mean, they were a 3-point favorite against Ohio.
Is Craig on the phone?
They won by 2 touchdowns.
Hey, Craig.
Hey, Brian.
Hey, we're talking about Purdue. Is this why you bring
I'm talking to Craig. Shut up, I'm talking to Craig.
No, I'm talking about Purdue.
All right, we do need to introduce Craig, though. Craig, who's written a couple of books about the University of Michigan, the football program. Craig, if you could tell the folks the titles of those books.
Oh, no, don't make him do this.
Yeah, don't make me do this. I wrote some books, whatever.
Enjoy talking to you, Craig.
Yeah, Missouri, beat this Montana team 72-43. And
Missouri State.
Yeah, Missouri State, excuse me. And Missouri State went up and down the field on them, gained, I don't know, 700 yards. And then Missouri lost at home to, I think, South Carolina by 18. So the fact that Purdue beat Missouri handily, I'm not sure that it's very meaningful.
Wow.
And also, if you look
veteran,
at
Craig Ross.
Yeah. So I'm not sure that game means particularly a whole lot. I mean, Purdue may be a good team.
They
look about average to me, actually. But an average team on the road, is something you can't just assume you're going
to
win.
Here's what I want to concede to Ed. Look, Purdue's better.
Don't do that.
Purdue is a better football team. In the past, they probably don't blow out a Missouri. Maybe they don't even beat Ohio. So I'll give you that they're better. But, dude, as the analogy that I used, yes, they're molding the clay better, but it's the same clay.
It'd be harder to do worse.
It's the same clay with the new coach.
That's what they're molding the clay better. Yeah.
I mean,
but
all of a sudden you got
the same clay.
I mean, you had a terrible offense, and all of a sudden Blau's completing over 3/4 of his passes.
They're molding the clay better, but it's the same clay.
Some of that was the Louisville defense that wasn't terrible last year.
Do I need to be here for this, or can I just go home?
So you your take home. On, give me your take on Purdue.
That wasn't a threat. I kind of wanted to go home.
Give me your take on Purdue.
Fine. Well, they're obviously much better coached. You know, you can't overestimate the coaching quality gap between Daryl Hazel and Jeff Brohm. And I think you're seeing Blau was always a guy who had a lot of talent, kind of mistake prone, and then the rest of their offense they didn't really have one. And he's doing everything that he can in his power to like magic up a bunch of points for his team. So they had a play from Super Tecmo Bowl with the double reverse. No, just one reverse. Sorry. I don't want to be that guy. The reverse, like, flea flicker. In the spring game, they ran a fake flea flicker. So, like, this is going to be, like, you're going to see the kitchen sink in this game, and they're going to try to get Michigan however they possibly can. Their problem is that they still have that offensive line that has been terrible, and they will get overrun.
Yeah, how do slow developing plays like reverses and those kind of things work against Michigan's defense?
Well, it's all misdirection, right? So they're hoping that they can peel some guys off and have the wrong person chasing someone else.
And this is, Sam, this is what I said earlier this morning, why while it's totally different looks, I think playing Air Force before you play Purdue is a good test. It's a good setup because you have to play, stay on your assignment against Air Force. Now it's a different assignment, but if you stick to your assignments at Purdue, that all that misdirection stuff isn't going to fool you nearly as much as a team that's going to get out of position.
Yeah, and that's a good point. And I think that Michigan actually has three corners that they trust, and that's going to be a plus. You might see some dime in this game. And they're running a 3-3-5. That's a pretty good match for a passing spread. They have Devin Bush, who's going to get at least one sack in this game, probably two. And, you know, it's not a good matchup for Purdue. Because this is not a defense that is going to run a 3-4 out there or a 4-3.
Yeah, I agree with that. The one note I'd want to make is that Purdue, even though they're spread the pass, they really try hard to stay balanced.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? And when I watched the game last week, it's almost a struggle for them to stay balanced, but they do stay balanced, and that makes them harder to defend. The other thing is you're going to see screens up the yin-yang. I mean, they ran four different kinds of screens in the first half. I think they ran seven screens in the first half. And they're going to run the same sort of rub routes we saw that Cincinnati run. So, I mean, this isn't a sitter by any stretch of the imagination, but I don't think they're quite as formidable as a lot of people seem to think either. I mean, they gave up 400 yards to Ohio U. So.
Well, do we really trust our cornerbacks now? I mean, we had a question marks about this coming into the season from what you were seeing in practice, Sam. And we were talking about, well, they got six games to get it together before Penn State. Well, I mean, now it looks like Purdue can sling the ball around a little bit.
Let's not make this a discussion of absolutes. Saying that Purdue is going to hit some plays, that they are going to test Michigan's secondary in ways that they haven't been tested thus far, you can say that and still think that Michigan is going to win this game and not be. I mean, all this upset alert talk. I'm not saying that you are talking that way, but it's like. Where did the football analysis go? Like, you got a reputable
Big Ten radio show callers?
No, I'm not just talking about radio show callers, of course. I'm talking about, I mean, you got a reputable analyst, supposedly.
Tom Diner, Sam, saying
upset alert, Michigan's going to get beaten by Purdue. What are you basing that on?
Well, he's basing that on the fact that he wants attention. So now we're giving him attention.
We are.
And yeah, what does a dirty substance does that take? No, not really. So it's like, Michigan hasn't been good in their red zone, and Purdue is better. So like they're gonna win. That's it.
I think Craig brought up a very important point here, and it's worth reemphasizing because Don Brown mentioned it as well. He said, you know, we talk a lot about how they sling it across the yard. He said, and Coach and Jim did. And they do all the things that you just mentioned, Brian, with all the trickeration and whatnot. But he said, man, they try to be balanced. they try to run the football. You look at the last couple of games, they had a slight TOP advantage against Ohio. They destroyed Missouri in time of possession. Point being, they've been able to control the ball. They've been able to keep their defense off the field. That kind of plays into your assessment of how good that defense has been. They are not gonna run the football. Of all the things that we can say about this game, the one that I feel the most confident in is Purdue is not going to run the football effectively against Michigan.
Yes, that's I agree. That's I very I agree. That's yeah. Right. That's correct.
I agree with that too. I mean, you know, this whole upset talk. I mean, yeah, I wouldn't put Michigan on upset alert at all. But you know, I have it about 21% Purdue's going to win this game. I mean, that would have been about 10-8 before the season. So I mean, that's what.
And you show that seems you, about right. I mean, that seems reasonable.
I mean, you want to put a 1-5 chance on it? Go for it.
The upset talk, I think, comes from anyone who watched the Purdue game last week, because the guys who called the game, I don't know who they are, predicted that Purdue would beat Michigan during the game.
Well, I mean, it's one thing for these trolls to say that Michigan's going to get upset. It's another for the Michigan fans to be calling in.
Right.
And well, they're thinking the sky's falling in.
They're like, oh, I fear something bad is going to happen, so I'm just going to assume it's going to happen, so then I can't be disappointed by it. So that's like Phil's whole life.
Well, not just Phil these days. It's not just
Phil.
Well,
we got Phil. Jose. Jose's like, well, on top, you know, on top of the
maybe
the Michigan
he's got a
right
brother
now, right?
From.
Could be. So give me your takes, because the point that I made toward the end of the last hour is yes. We see the red zone inefficiency.
Hey, wait. Red zone offense doesn't exist.
Okay, whatever. The stat that they keep that measures your success from 20 yards and in.
All right, I'm going to tell you something. So Football Outsiders, they went and they did a study. And what they did is the NFL, they calculated how much better your red zone offense was than your regular offense for the first 7 games of the year. And then they compared that to the same stat for these last 10 weeks of the season, and there was no correlation whatsoever. The R was 0.01.
Well, that's kind of – well, then you're kind of making my point, all right?
Red zone offense does not exist.
Okay, so listen. My point is that even if you're using this – it sounds like you said this is a totally arbitrary assessment.
There's problems with the offense, but the problems with the offense are problems with the offense.
I hear
they aren't problems with the red zone offense. Football doesn't change once you get inside the 20.
This is why I love Brian Cook, man, because he can take some perfectly awesome analytics and then end it with the statement that red zone offense doesn't exist.
Red zone offense does not exist.
It does. It's well-defined. It's how many times you score when you get inside your opponent's 20. Exists.
It doesn't exist.
It exists.
It's just offense.
I just defined it for you.
For the sake of argument.
Wait. If I make a blue zone and the blue zone is 25 yards and in, does that offense exist all of a sudden?
Yes, it exists because you just defined it. The point is, red zone offense in the first half of the season doesn't predict what you're going to do in the second half of the season.
And this is my point.
It doesn't exist. It doesn't exist.
This is my point. Okay, so this 1-for-10 that they've
it's 2-for-10.
What?
No. He scored outside the red zone that last touchdown.
No, it's 2-for-10 because the ref thing in
okay. Yeah. Okay, so we'll give him 2-for-10. We'll give him
2-for-10.
So that 2-for-10, even if we assume that there are no improvements made on offense, can't we all agree that that number is not going to hold?
Yes.
That number
I
is
agree
not
with
gonna
you,
hold.
Sam.
So the worst.
Just like, come on,
the
man.
Worst teams in the country in this stat that does not exist are about 40%. So unless Michigan is just the worst red zone offense in the history of football, again, and red zone offenses do not exist. Shut up, Ed.
This is so fun.
Only
this
Brian Cook
fun.
Can take awesome analytics and make up statements like red zone offense doesn't
exist. This is like
ESPN did a pretty good job articulating that the red zone thing is kind of a misnomer.
This is
a pretty good article, actually.
This is religion for Ed, and you are just
No, he agrees with me. I agree with the general.
He's
just only
he's objecting to the way I'm phrasing it.
Yes.
Oh, okay. So you aren't saying it nice enough.
Because he's a pedant.
Well, I would say it more like just take the analytic stuff and flush it down the toilet and don't worry about it in the red zone. Does that help? Or with Missouri. I would take Missouri's analytics and flush those down the toilet, too.
734-998.
That's not very nice either.
We got to get to a break. When we come back on the other side, we'll get to some phone calls.
Fire it up!
Get to some phone calls. you know, have you guys give your, because I didn't get your takes on the Air Force game.
No,
jump right into
didn't.
Purdue. You know, get a few takes from you on that. We'll continue the MGO Blog Roundtable on the other side here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK, the ticket. We are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTK.com. Don't you love this crew, the MGO Blog Roundtable crew? I mean, Craig isn't even in maybe that's why
Craig isn't
backing his boy Ed Fang up today. Normally, it's Craig and Ed versus Brian. But today, today Craig is backing up Brian.
What? No,
dude,
that's not true.
I'm plenty happy to tell Craig he's crazy, too.
Craig is crazy.
I'm trying to be the voice of reason on a rare instance. Red zone defense, Ed is correct. Red zone defense red zone data is meaningful. But in this case, you only got 10 data points. It just isn't enough.
That's the point. Really, funny. It's like you were sitting inside Schebeckle Hall. JT Rogan said the same thing to me every day. He was like, yesterday, he was like, dude, I mean, it's not like we got this huge sample space right now when you talk about red zone offense.
Right. And the you know, what's more concerning, I think, should be, is our third down data. And there we're hitting it, I think average is about 40%. I think we were 43% last year. And right now we're hitting it 34%. So that's not particularly good. On the other hand, anybody who saw the Florida-Tennessee game this last week knows that Florida can play defense. And Cincinnati, Miami, since he went down to Miami, they're a 4-point underdog. They won, and they pretty much stifled the Miami offense. Now, that may not be incredibly impressive, but I don't think either Florida or Cincinnati is a bad defensive team. I think they're probably pretty good defensive teams. So that bears on what's gone on so far.
Way to drop some knowledge there, Craig.
Yeah, that was really nice. Oh, that Tennessee at Florida game. I mean, I think a lot of people just saw the quote-unquote Hail Mary at the end. Yeah. That was the worst game of football I've ever seen in my life.
No, that's not possible.
It was awful.
Brian, he must have missed the moon game.
Yeah, that's what I said. Well, remember moon? That was you don't remember moon? Well,
if you don't remember the Michigan Northwestern 0-0 game, that's a much worse football game.
You don't remember Michigan Wisconsin,
or do you see that picture of, like, you know, Frank Beamer with his triumphant arms in the air because he got to overtime 0-0 with Wake Forest, right?
You remember
Michigan-Wisconsin in 2010 where it was like, my God, there's no hope of ever stopping the run.
That's a different terrible kind of game.
Yeah, I'm talking about this terrible, like, mutual incompetence. Are just like dropping balls that go for a pick six.
That's a different.
Getting stripped on the fumble, like at the 1-yard line. I mean, it was...
It was
laughable until a pretty exciting ending.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyways, enough of that game.
All right. Yeah. So Air Force, guys, give me your takes on that game, on that victory.
Well, the defense came up with a plan. Air Force had a plan to defeat Michigan's plan. They started defeating Michigan's plan, and then they stopped doing it. And I don't know why. But it took them like 3 or 4 drives to come back to what they were originally doing successfully.
Which was?
That power option. So they'd load up one side of the front, and then they'd just run a power option at Michigan. And they didn't have the guys to block it. So Gary got doubled. Furbush got doubled. And it was up to, you know, Bush to get around that. And when he did, it was like 5-6 yards at a minimum. So they really had something there. And then I think they anticipated that Michigan would blow it up, and they went away from it, and they couldn't find anything that worked until like the fourth quarter. So maybe they kind of outsmarted themselves, but, you know, Don Brown said they had one bust, and that is more impressive.
It was the touchdown.
Yeah. And that's more impressive than anything else that I've probably ever heard about anything, because you have this Air Force offense that can really put it to you mentally, and they've managed to get through a game with one bust.
Ed?
Yeah, I thought the offensive line played pretty well. I know I was pretty critical of the right side of that line, but
you thought Michigan's offensive line played pretty well?
Yes, I thought Michigan's offensive line looked pretty good. I mean, you know, it's Mountain West competition. It's not Florida, but I thought that was definitely a positive in the game. Yeah, clearly the offense probably wasn't, wasn't as efficient. I mean, we had the drop ball. Spate missed some throws. I'm too concerned about.
What do you make of the pressure that Air Force was able to put
Well, I mean, a lot of those were blitzes, right?
That's how they play.
Yes.
So
yes.
They had safeties at 8 yards for almost this whole game. And that's just who they are because that's who they have to be because they're an academy team. And the way they work is they really stuff you up and then they give up some big plays. And Michigan in this game had 2 long touchdowns from Ty Isaac that were almost, but not quite. Mm-hmm. So he steps out on the 30 by a toenail, and then the world's worst holding call against Kakoa Crawford.
Oh, man, that sucked.
Just unbelievably terrible call brings that back. And if those things go the other way, then Michigan scores a couple touchdowns. This is a much more...
Excuse maker.
It's not an excuse maker. It's just that, like, when you hit your big plays against Air Force...
That's not me talking.
It is.
No, it's
when
not.
You hit your big plays against Air Force, they have to be capital B-I-G big plays, and here they weren't. So, and why was that? It was dumb luck.
Yeah, Wilton talked a lot about their ability to disguise coverages and pressure and pressures. He said there were a number of occasions where, you know, he thought he recognized the look or he recognized the look they were in, checked if he had to. And then as he snapped the ball, they're bringing the house.
Yeah, there were definitely a couple instances of that. I mean, one thing that did disappoint me is we didn't see a lot of like max protect play action. And I thought this was going to be the perfect team to run that against. You put Peoples-Jones out, and you run some play action on first down. Those safeties flow up, and he's one-on-one with a cornerback in a ton of space. I'm going to take that matchup. And they didn't do that once. So, I mean, hopefully if they come across a team as aggressive as Air Force was, which they probably won't, they'll be more inclined to take some deep shots. Because after the first play of the game, they really didn't do it at all.
Any thoughts on the game there, Craig?
Yeah, I mean, the thing that was most impressive to me was the fact that Air Force, I'm pretty sure this is right, completed one pass.
Yes.
Yeah. And they tried to throw, I think, 13. Yeah, they tried to throw 13 times, and I think on 12 of them they ended up at, like, minus 28 yards.
Yeah.
And then they had the one big pass, and that was it. And that place, you know, on the whining front, and I've never – that's something that I'm always willing to do, but that play shouldn't have even existed because the prior play was a 3rd and 3, I think, and Mo Hurst just blew the play up, and he was about ready to tackle the quarterback when the left guard just decided, ah, hell, I'll tackle him, and so he tackled Mo Hurst from behind, right in front of the referee, and the guy barely makes the first down, and then we have the bust. Now I wonder about the bust on the long pass. I mean, everyone was blaming, I think, Nettles on that,
and I
think that perhaps it was the corner, because the corner didn't seem to cover the guy coming out of the backfield until two.
Don mentioned that. So Metellus did covers for the corner. He said the corner had done his job. Metellus rolls over the top and gives you a safety on the back end.
Bracket.
So
I mean,
well, Cannell still got beat on the play.
Cannell got beat, and that should have been 15, 20 yards
instead of a touchdown.
And Metellus busted, and that's why it's a touchdown. So.
Yeah,
the play never should have happened. They should have been punting, but that's okay.
And Don said, well, that's on me. I didn't show him that look in practice. Like, dude, that's Don Brown for you. He's going to show his guys everything. They messed up. They messed up. It's my fault. It's like, wow. You got to love if you're a player playing for a coach like that.
You know, I thought it was interesting that, you know, in the post-game press conference, Harbaugh comes out and he's like, yeah, man, they had some play calls that we were not ready for in the red zone. And it's a kind of a difference between previous coaching regimes where they were like, yeah, that's on the players who need to execute the crappy job we did preparing them. That's their fault. And Harbaugh's not like that. He's like, yeah, we got.
Yeah. I mentioned that earlier this week. He didn't mince words. I mean, they got beat on some plays, players, and they said it's coaches. I mean, they had some better calls than us.
Well, and you know, there's, if you are a bad football coach, it's about execution. And Harbaugh's like, no, this is about tactics, and I appreciate that. And we didn't do a good job as coaches. And there's ways to say that is clearly that you mean it. And there's ways to say that where you clearly don't mean it, like Butch Jones. Butch Jones is like, this loss is on us, and also mostly the players.
I don't know how you let some. How do you let a guy run wide open behind your secondary?
I didn't mean Butch Jones. I meant Brian Kelly. I'm sorry about that. I didn't mean to slander Butch Jones for something he doesn't deserve to be slandered for.
Butch Jones has done plenty to get slandered.
Okay. Well, yes, he has, but not that particular thing. I'm talking about Brian Kelly.
All right, let's go to the phones. Guys have been waiting patiently on hold. Let's start off down in South Carolina and talk to Eric. Eric, how you doing this morning?
Hey, can y'all hear me all right? Because it sounds like it's breaking up a little bit.
Yeah, we got you.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, awesome. Hey, great show, guys. Good to hear everybody. Hope everybody's doing well. Craig stole my thunder a little bit. I was going to talk about Missouri, man. You got to get excited about Purdue beating up on Missouri. You might as well get excited about Mike Tyson beating up Michael Spinks.
You just lost a whole generation of listeners. They have no idea what you're talking about. But I get it. I get it, Eric. I get it.
You know what I'm talking about, right? But, Missouri is a terrible team. I mean, you know, I live in South Carolina, and I'm in SEC country, and people in SEC country think that they're the worst team in the SEC. So for Purdue to go in there and beat them, I mean, what, Missouri State scored 40-something points on them? I mean, come on now. And I just want to tell Michigan fans, you guys got to quit panicking. If you look at our strength, is defense. Don Brown is the master of stopping spread offenses. He held Clemson and doggone Florida State in check when he was at Boston College with 3- and 2-star no-ranked players.
Yeah, that brings me to a couple of points, Brian. First of all, I want to know how have people on the blog been. I mean, is there mass panic on the blog? And then the other question, you guys have any theories on how Don Brown flew under the radar for so long?
Well, he kept bouncing places. So he was at Maryland for a few years. He was at UConn for years. And then he's at BC. And he doesn't really have a nationally elite defense until BC because he doesn't stay at any one place long enough. Because his coaches kept getting fired or whatever, I don't know.
But wasn't he a head coach for a while, and he did a pretty good job as a head coach?
UMass, right? Wasn't he UMass?
Yeah.
At some point. And
yeah,
then
they were probably FCS at that point.
I think
though,
he just flat out decided he was going to be a defensive coordinator. Because for whatever reason, he's like Bud Foster, where it's like, this is my job, and this is what I'm best at.
Yeah, he's...
he's right about that, right?
He's right.
So, Don, I met Don Brown in the airport in Boston. And then he got on the plane and he was sitting in the middle seat in coach. And I think that just speaks to the fact that, like, he's not a guy that's going to brag. He's like an everyday kind of guy.
That's poor planning, though. Like, that's like coach, fine. Middle seat. That's like, come on.
He's got to check in earlier or something.
Right. That's
I don't think he's a guy that's actually the
worst thing I've ever heard about Don Brown, because it's the only bad thing I've ever heard about Don Brown.
No, come on, Ira, what'd you say when I told you that story?
No, it makes him sound like a regular guy. But Brian's point is, because he's
middle
a regular
seat.
Guy.
Yeah.
His
middle
point
seat.
Is that that's just, most of us plan to get windows and aisles. Ask Sam. Sam's a window guy. I'm an aisle guy. We plan ahead. But the point that you made, and I agreed with you when you talked about it. However long
and that's
it was
assuming
now.
That's he's assuming that Don Brown had planned, you know, scheduled, booked his own ticket.
That's true. It could be somebody else's fault.
Might be a faulty assumption there.
He was going out to talk at a conference, right? Seeing a son or whatnot. So maybe they booked it. But do you invite Don Brown and book him in the middle seat and coach?
You do have last minute. If it's the last seat left.
That's probably what it
that's
was.
That's probably poor planning, man.
He's getting his grind on. That's what it is.
And he said, hey, out.
I got a recruit to go see. I got to go do this.
Craig, any thoughts on how Don Brown flew below the radar for so long?
Well, I have no idea. But, you know, he actually came up on our show about 4 years ago, although not by name, when I started talking about the Boston College defense as the best defense I'd seen that year. And I didn't know Don Brown was the coach at that particular point in time. Huh. So, we, even on our show, he did sort of in an inadvertent way come up. But, yeah, I have no idea because she's as good as I've ever seen. I mean, I don't recall seeing anybody better. I mean, do you recall a better defensive coordinator at the NCAA level than Don Brown?
I'm amazingly impressed with how he has – a young group playing at the level they're playing. Now, again, this is going to be a different test, and they're going to be tested much more as the season goes on. But for them to, even against the competition they played thus far, to look as good as they've looked, to be as sound as they've been, You got to give the guy all kind of props for that.
Well, I mean, you have a second-year player in Devin Bush who looks like the best Michigan linebacker since David Harris. And you've got a second-year player on the other side of the ball at wide receiver in Crawford who's not performing anywhere near that level. And I don't necessarily think that – and Don Brown coaches his linebackers. And Michigan's wide receivers coach is Pep Hamilton, who's not really a wide receivers coach. And I'm just – I feel like – there's kind of like a gap in Michigan's like skill position coaching because you have Jay Harbaugh, who's a worker and he's a good coach, but he never played running back. He's not really a running back's coach.
Mattai is playing pretty well right now.
Higdon is missing a lot of cuts, though. So he's had one like really big cavern that he's failed to get to in each game at this point. And Evans is kind of not hitting it right now. So I don't know. We'll see. I would feel better if there was like, you know, Ty Wheatley is senior is like, okay.
Well,
this guy knows
you remember that
everything
Jay,
about
Jay.
Being
Jay
back.
Has what's the guy's name? I mean, he has a running back assistant.
Yeah, he does, and he has grad assistants, and they are helping out with the position coaching. But it was really nice when Wheatley was around because you just knew that was fine, you know.
Yeah, I kind of disagree with this because I think running backs are more, at least in terms of running ability, are more born than made.
I always thought that, and then Wheatley came around. Yeah.
Well, I think for whatever reason, I guess you got to give Ty some credit as well. Yeah. But, I mean, this you just named, I mean, he's a hair from two long touchdowns and starting out the season with three consecutive 100-yard rushing efforts if those plays aren't.
I mean, he's done well. Don't get me wrong. He had a couple of hiccups. I mean, my original point was just like I was super impressed with the way Devin Bush is playing because he's a second year player and he's killing it.
Like, he is.
He's not just killing it with his speed. He's killing it mentally.
Yeah, I said yesterday he has been as much of a force, as much of a playmaker when it comes to making plays in the backfield as through three games as Jabril Peppers was last year.
Yeah, and
different position, but still same kind of impact.
I mean, they had like a 3rd-and-25 quarterback draw, and Devin Bush is blitzing, and he's when he blitzes, he goes all out, and he manages to stop, redirect, and tackle for 2 yards. And he gets up.
Yeah, that play was mind blowing. I agree with you.
And he gets up, and he's more hyped up about anything that he did in this game about this play, and I agree with him because I'm just like that ability to redirect is why he's so effective as a blitzer because. There's so many guys who come in super hot at a quarterback and then they just miss because the quarterback steps up. That doesn't happen with Bush, and that's because he's 5'11" and he can redirect like that. And what a scout! I mean, like they had 5 stars on the hook at linebacker and they just kind of dump them.
Yeah, we want Devin Bush. That is a great point. That is a great point because they had him for a while, and they could have easily, you know, as you said, you got 5 stars that. Are all around, and they decided, no, we got our guy at that position, and he is showing why. We got to get to a break. Ira is motioning like, what the hell are you doing, Sam? I'm getting to a break right now. We'll close things out with the phone lines when we return here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK, the ticket. And we are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTKA.com. We are live here inside the Emden Studios. Our friends down at Suburban Chevrolet Cadillac in Ann Arbor want you to come on down. Check out the great lease deals they have going on the corner of Jackson and Wagner Roads in Ann Arbor, 3515 Jackson Road. To be exact, right now you can lease a 2017 Chevy Silverado 4-wheel drive LT double cab. You can lease that pickup for $134 per month with $995 down or sign and drive for $249 per month for 24 months. You can get into a 2017 Chevy Cruze LT. You can lease that for $135 per month with $995 down, sign and drive for $233 per month. For 24 months, and last but certainly not least, the 2017 Chevy Traverse 1LT. You can lease that for $139 per month with $995 down to sign and drive for $243 per month for 24 months. For those and other great lease deals, make it on down to Suburban Chevrolet Cadillac in Ann Arbor and make the choices. Blow through some phone calls real quick. Go out to Hamburg and talk to a guy who's been waiting patiently on hold, John. John, you're on the MGO Blog Roundtable. What's up?
Hey, is it 2018? Oh, I'm sorry, 17. I got a couple questions. Don Brown's defense, how does that play in the NFL? And when you guys break down tape, are you just taking the TV tape
obviously you don't have the coaches' tapes, because when I'm watching a game, I can't see all the stuff you guys see. The third thing, if they go to 2-1, do they go to McCafferty? I think it is. Does he jump Peters? And then I just got a little comment. The other night I ran into Spate when my headlights hit his eyes. Yeah.
What?
I'll listen.
What?
NFL question. That's what? All you, Brian.
No, it doesn't play in the NFL.
Ira. Was that a real call?
Yeah, I mean, I would hope so if you wait on hold that long.
Jose and John, something's going on with the callers lately.
Lately?
This is on a different level, man.
Fine, a new phone blame the new phone system, Sam.
So Michigan can't be 2-1. But if they're 3-1, Brian, does McCaffrey start next week?
Well, yeah, the bye week?
Yeah, the bye week.
Sure, he can start during the bye week.
All right. What else did he ask? Well, I'm missing one.
I just.
How does Don Brown's defense play in the NFL?
I said it doesn't, because he's a college guy, and who cares?
I'm sure he could come up with it.
I'm just going off the film
then something about his headlights hitting Spate. Nah.
Right. Yeah. If it's the headlights, that's fine. But like, don't hit him with a car. Like that's my advice to you, motorists of Ann Arbor. Don't hit people with cars.
And
especially Wilton Spate or Jim Harbaugh.
If it were an alternate universe and Michigan somehow
was 2-1,
able to be 2-1 at this point, the next quarterback in at this point would be O'Korn.
No, it would still be Spate.
He said if something about his headlights.
I think he's trying to make a joke. So
I'm lost.
So
next caller.
Wait. I want it. The premise of this is like he's in the car and he like.
I'm sorry, John. And like I didn't
Spate's
understand.
In the headlights.
And this is my fault. I shouldn't riff on you like this. I don't know what you were getting at in some of the questions, though, so I apologize. I didn't interpret them correctly. Let's go back to the phones. I don't think.
Legendary.
And talk to Phil in Atlanta. Phil, what's up?
What are you doing?
what's going on, Sam? First of all, I just think the game this Saturday is going to be a blowout. I think Michigan is going to come out with a lot of aggression offensively.
Now I'm convinced that Jose is the fake Twitter handle for Jose and Phil are related. Same guy. That way you have the two opposite ends of the take, and you're good.
I think, they're going to run the ball effectively. Hopefully this will be a redemption game for Evans. Defensively, I just don't think Purdue's quarterback is going to have time. I think Michigan is going to put a lot of pressure. He can throw the football and got good receivers, but I just think, Michigan defensive line is better than Purdue's offensive line. My only question is, Sam, why the hell they got Kakura Crawford at kickoff return?
I mean,
you and Brian and Phil in agreement. Unbelievable.
You can put Donovan Peoples-Jones there and just see what happens.
I cannot believe. No, that's not the most important part of that.
He's not wrong.
Brian Cook right there, Sam.
Brian Cook and Phil are on the same page.
I'm just messing with you, Brian.
if someone comes to the light side, I'm not going to be like, no, you can't come over here. That's what I'm saying. Like.
This is one of the funnest hours in radio, I must say, guys. I appreciate you coming in for the MGo Blog Roundtable every single week. Craig, wherever you are.
Thanks.
Thanks for calling in.
Where are you?
I'm in Wyoming and I'm looking at a moose out the window right now, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Nice. Oh, wait. Ira said we got one more call to squeeze in. Jake in Ann Arbor. Jake, what's up?
I was just going to say, I really have a really good feeling about this game. I feel like we're going to be clicking on all cylinders. I'm going Michigan winning 35-17. And I also talked to the athletic department. They have a game time coming out for the Michigan State game expected on Monday. I'll hang up and listen. Go Blue.
If it's a night game, we'll find out Sunday, actually.
That was a very efficient call. Thank you.
All right. Until next week, guys. Next week, guys, thanks for coming in. That'll do it for us here on the Michigan Insider. Coming up next is Inside the Huddle with Michael Spath. Here on Sports Talk 1050, WTKA, The Ticket, the official voice of University of Michigan Sports, Ann Arbor, a Cumulus station.
got it better than